future is now. And welcome to the SVK Crypto Podcast. 15 minutes of crypto fame.
My name is Charles Story. I'll be your host for the next 15 minutes. Well, scratch that. It's Thursday. That means one thing and one thing only. It's ladies' night here at SVK Crypto. So what that entails and what that means for you is that I'm going to be passing the rest of the show over to my co-host, Miss Jess Holgrave, who's the co-founder of Shios, a female-driven block producer trying to push more women to enter into the space. Today on the show, we are honored and privileged to have Maxine Ryan, the co-founder and COO of Bitspark. If you haven't heard of Bitspark already, you are missing out. So today you're going to learn all about it. And if you have, you're going to hear the story behind it. What makes the founders tick? Why they do what they do? Why do they get up in the morning and push the envelope each and every day? So with that in mind, let's jump into the interview.
Hi everyone, I'm Jess Holgrave, and I'm really excited to be hosting the SVK Crypto 15 Minutes of Crypto Fame podcast. I'm a co-founder of Shios, an EOS block producer with a mission to bring more women and diversity into blockchain. On Thursdays for the next few weeks, I'll be bringing stories from interesting women working in the blockchain space to tell you their background and draw some attention to the great work being done by women in crypto. You can follow me on Twitter at Jessie Block and send me suggestions of women who you'd like to hear from too. This week, I'm joined by Maxine Ryan, founder of Bitspark, a fintech startup providing cash in and cash out blockchain remittances. Maxine, I'm so pleased to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. You
quit your job, your undergrad degree in 2014 to start Bitspark, which is a huge thing. What was the starting point for you?
That's a very good question. You know, essentially what was happening was I was studying a degree in international relations at that time. And I studied that degree because I wanted to, you know, explore the option of how to create fundamental change in society. But the more I did my degree and the longer that it took, I kind of felt disenchanted with the idea of getting into like government or politics. So I think I was just really open to new ideas that could elicit the type of change that I was seeking to make. And, you know, just very serendipitously, I at that time also had just moved into a new house, and my housemate was actually my business partner now, George Harrett. So he was mining crypto at that time. And I remember him mentioning to me about cryptocurrency. And at that time, Bitcoin was the first one out. So we began talking about it, and it was like the best idea I'd have ever heard. And I never went back and finished my degree from there. So that's really how the journey started for me.
That's amazing. I think that's the level of conviction that you have to do that is really impressive, and congratulations, because I think it's obviously turned out to be a good decision for you.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Bitspark? You know, what you do, what your mission is, and how you've built that company over the last, well, 5 years now.
Absolutely. So I would say that in a nutshell, Bitspark provides a bankless money transfer service for the unbanked. And, you know, the money transfer industry is a really special one because it's very cash orientated. So our goal is to basically be able to facilitate in developing countries, you know, the need for cash, and then also being able to send that overseas and cashing it out again. And, you know, we hear the word remittance a lot. And really what that refers to is just microtransfers that are being sent overseas without the use of a bank. Now, what we typically do is we have an entire end-to-end system. So that means that from the time that the money lands in one of our shops, you know, it gets turned to a digital balance, which we use stable coins for, and they're able to hold that balance on our web or app platform. And then from there, any sort of exchange that they do is much like they would be doing with Western Union or any other money transfer platform. But the back end of that is really where the magic happens with Bitspark. You know, our goal is to create 180 plus pegged cryptocurrencies. And the idea of that is that everybody in the world is able to exchange these currencies for one another through our decentralized exchange. and be able to cash it out in like a meaningful way. And I guess like the story that I always say is that if a lot of the time, like cash is still very important for especially developing countries. And, you know, it's not everybody has a bank account as well. So it's a very great idea to be like, oh, well, this person can use Bitcoin to buy, you know, food at their store in a rural village in Philippines. But that doesn't actually have much use case for them, at least at this sense now. So we really want to solve that problem. We think cash is very positive. We think that cash is going to be around, it's still king, it's still going to be around for a long time. But we also see that by using cryptocurrency and blockchain technology, we can reduce the price and the friction that it costs to send money overseas. And that in a nutshell is what we do.
Maxine, that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I think there's a lot of talk about crypto being used in cross-border payments and things like that, and a lot of misconceptions about it. You know, what does it actually mean? How does it work for people? Can you tell us a little bit about how you see that overall space?
Sure. I think what people really think of when they think of sending money is that, well, it's easy for me because I have a bank account. But for about 2 billion people in the world that rely on remittances, depending on what region they come from, of course, but they still very much rely and they're dependent on the source of income that comes from usually like a family member that's working overseas. And I think what's really fascinating is that because they don't have a bank account, they have to use a third-party service. And the most popular one that we know is Western Union. And Western Union's been in the space for 150 years. So they really have domination in the non-bank money transfer space. But of course, we always hear the story of Western Union being so expensive. And the reason why they're so expensive is because not only do they have to have the infrastructure to be able to, I guess, facilitate this cash demand, but also they're still connected to banks. Like you have to remember, it's not that Western Union has their own banking system. They also rely on banks themselves. So really, because of so many intermediaries between the steps of getting physical cash from one end to the other, it is a very complicated and expensive step. And a lot of the time that reduces the amount of money that lands in these countries. So that really is the fundamental problem that we're trying to solve. And you know, for our customers, we're not reinventing the wheel whatsoever for them. How they interface with our platform, our shops and all this type of stuff is exactly the same as they would with Western Union. Even our cash out locations are identical to the option. So currently we're in 7 different markets and we have over 500,000 cash out locations. And essentially what happens is that our customers have the exact same experience, but what they see on the screen is the savings that we're able to provide them. So by using cryptocurrency, they're able to save 2 to 15% on every single transfer, depending on the market that they're sending to. So I'm really excited to announce that we just opened the Cambodia to Philippines corridor, and our rates are 5% better than the most popular provider there, which is Western Union, which of course, that's like an amazing thing to be able to achieve. But I really hope that we can you know, launch in more countries and provide these types of very unique but important services to people that need them.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations on the launch. I think, you know, when we think about those as percentages, it's hard to conceive, but even, you know, $20 of fees is really meaningful for a lot of people. And so every little bit, I think, makes a huge difference. So I think what you're doing is super impressive. You know, I think I'm really interested. I think in the Western world, we talk a lot about moving away from a cash society. Mm-hmm. You know, more and more people don't carry cash anymore. Certainly, you know, I'm from the UK and that's the case and many places in Europe. But in Asia, it's actually very different. Can you talk to me a little bit more about, you know, is it growing? Is cash kind of a growing thing in Asia?
I mean, cash is the main way people exchange in developing countries, especially in Asia. But I think the main consensus here is that cash is still very important. And I think it's important for a few reasons. And the main thing is that the infrastructure that's in Asia or even Africa for banking services is just not as advanced as you get in the West. So a lot of the time in the West, like, you know, the UK, you guys have fundamental points of ID that allow you to have a bank account. And as soon as you get a bank account, then you get an access to a whole range of different services that allow you to go cashless. But in Hong Kong, well, not in Hong Kong, actually, in Asia in general, it's still very fragmented. So we don't have just kind of one blanket service that everybody's already connected to. It's still very much like chopped up, and it really depends on the market that you're servicing. So I think because the Asia market, in terms of how money moves, is just fundamentally in its architecture very different to the West, it's harder for this cashless society to be adopted. Does it mean that it'll never be adopted? I don't think so. I think that it's just in a bit of a, it's just a little bit behind of what's existing in the West. But I think the main point I want to bring up is that cash in a libertarian standpoint is very important, because as soon as you hand your money over and it's on a database, then you essentially can lose control. Like, there's a lot of trust there that you have to rely on for your bank to essentially not to essentially keep it and keep it secure and all this type of stuff. So I think that's why, like, Asia is particularly very interesting when we're looking at cryptocurrency applications, because it allows us to see, you know, how P2P might work. Like, how does somebody really own the value of their money, and, you know, what kind of structures would come out from there. So I think, you know, to sum it up, Asia is like a very interesting space, just because there are so many different countries that have very different ways to send money, keep money as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Asia will adopt a completely cashless society.
Yeah. I mean, do you think in some ways that is responsible to the kind of high level, certainly relative to Europe, of interest in crypto? You know, every time I've spent time in Asia over the last couple of years, predominantly at blockchain and cryptocurrency related events, I've just been overwhelmed by the amount of interest and engagement from, you know, a very, very wide range of people. What drives that?
What do you mean specifically?
Is it something culturally that people are interested in about cryptocurrency, or what's the driving force between for Asia to be so predominant in blockchain and crypto?
That's really interesting, and I think it depends on the country that you're looking at. Like, I know that you know, one of the first booms that we saw in Bitcoin was predominantly because people found it a very legitimate way to get money out of China, right? China has very strict capital controls. And of course, when you get the boom of the economy there, people want to protect their wealth. And one way to protect their wealth is essentially by investment. But if you can't get your money out of the country, that can be really difficult. So I highly suspect that the first boom of crypto, which was mostly from China, was to do with this point, was that suddenly, well, a large part of the Chinese population kind of figured out, wow, this is a very effective way to move money overseas. That's probably like one thing. But I think the general thing that's happening in Asia is that, like, we pick up technology very quickly. You know, if you look at the US, what happens is usually they pick up technology. Also, actually, they over-regulate before the technology has any chance to really do what it does. But I feel like in Asia in general, it's kind of more of like a wait and see type of game, where people are willing to kind of take the risks. And like, the markets here are much freer, so it's much easier to kind of test the technology in a space without having too much consideration for the hurdles that might be implemented. But it's really interesting. I think right now the biggest thing people see in crypto is just this enormous opportunity. And I always think that the opportunity is, in the first sense, is in payments, because that's why Bitcoin even existed in the first place. But of course, now we have so many other projects out there that are exploring different ways to apply it, whether it be in like verification or like privacy coins and all this type of stuff. So it's going to be super interesting to see how this is going to be adopted, especially in the payment space in Asia in general.
And of course, what you're building, the sort of the cash gateway, as it were, is kind of critical for that adoption. What are some of the challenges you face when you're building out those sort of pathways, those routes, as you described them? Yeah,
so the main thing is that you need to have as many cash-in, cash-out locations as possible. And that can be really hard to build as a startup. So one of the first things that we did was that we actually relied on existing cash-out locations that people are very familiar with in these local jurisdictions. And the way that we did that was purely through API. So our system originally was connected to over 11 APIs that gave us access to all these different cash out locations, which meant that we were able to, you know, not only, you know, provide cheap money transfers, but we were also able to say, hey, and you can still cash out at exactly where you used to do it. But thing is, like, our vision is much bigger, and what we want to focus on is building our own cash out locations as well. So the whole idea is to reduce the reliances on these third party services, because they still have a built in cost there. And the second component is to build our own cash out shops, so that essentially it's BitSpark to BitSpark directly, which I think is going to be really exciting. So we still have the traditional cash-in, cash-out locations that people are used to, but of course, the more the better. And if we're able to reduce the cost of that as well, that's going to be super exciting for us to do.
That's amazing. And so that is a huge, huge program in terms of recruiting people and spaces and things like that. You know, what's that roadmap for you over the next few years?
Yeah, I think it's all about incentive. And I think why people might want to become a cash-in, cash-out location with us is essentially it's a new way to revive a business. So what happens is that we're targeting money transfer shops that already do money transfers. But the thing is, as a shop owner, you're actually pretty, the margins are pretty low for you, depending on what provider you're connected to. But with us, I think what's going to be very fascinating, or a very unique value proposition to them, is that by using our service, they are actually essentially just buying and selling cryptocurrency, which is another type of revenue stream for them. And on top of that, what we see a lot in like the network growth stuff is that as long as there's incentivization and education, it tends to pick up pretty quickly. So that really is the strategy for us. And it's going to be really exciting to kind of start rolling these out in the countries that we're already in, and then more countries after that. We have two offices. The first one is in Hong Kong. This is our headquarters. And then we have our development team that's in the Ukraine. And essentially, we are about 22 people, 17 of which are full-time employees, and the rest are freelancers or part-time. And essentially, we like to keep it pretty lean. And the reason being is because I really believe in everybody that joins the team here really believes in the mission. So I like the idea of, you know, a smaller team with a bigger impact, and being able to like connect on a kind of like more meaningful level than, you know, hiring, you know, maybe 100 people. And then essentially it's like you kind of like dissipate what the mission is. So I'm really lucky to be surrounded by people that are, you know, super intelligent. They're completely on board with what we're trying to do in the company. And yeah, it's been like a really amazing process to see the company grow for the last 5 years.
So when you started out, you were, you know, very young, you just dropped out of university, and building a business in what is, you know, I think often perceived as a very male dominated industry. You know, how has that journey been for you personally?
This is a really fascinating topic because, to be honest, for me, I think everything is about merit. And when I started, I just worked really hard. And I never felt as though I was, you know, left out or anything like that because I was a woman. And I think the main point is that the cryptocurrency space is so young right now that there really isn't too much, I would say. And I say that very lightly because this is my personal experience. Compared to like other women in the space, but I didn't think there was like too many ceilings because the environment didn't even exist, right? So I think it's mostly to do with like merit based. Like I know my worth, like I know what I do, I know the time that I spent on something, and I know that I can speak with authority on certain topics. And I think that's kind of like my main experience, is that I've never felt outcasted in any way. But, you know, after 2017, what we did see is like, you know, an influx of new people in the space. And I think this is kind of where the problems started happening. And we did start seeing, you know, maybe people like being harassed at like events and, you know, lots of like nasty things that we just don't want in the industry in general. But I would say like my experience so far has been a very positive one. And, you know, with more interest, you do get bad actors, and it's up to us as a community to kind of stick together and stand against that. But I think if I had like a message for women is that this is such a unique space that it would be such a shame to not take advantage of this opportunity that's in front of us. Because you don't get many of these types of opportunities in general, I think, in life. And we're in a very special space right now with cryptocurrency, where this is going to change the world in a fundamental way. So I think that the opportunities there are really available for women to take advantage of, for sure.
Awesome. Well, I think you're certainly testament to somebody who has a lot of conviction about the space and what you're doing. And it's really exciting to hear, you know, how well BitSpark is doing. Just researching before I spoke with you today, you know, I'm super impressed. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You've built something that's really, really amazing. So I always like to just finish the interview with a quick fire fun round of questions. Are you a late night person or an early morning person?
I'm an early morning person.
And if you're an animal, what would you be?
This is a funny one. I mean, my zodiac's a monkey, but I think I'd be a dog because I just love dogs a lot.
I think I'd like to be a dog too.
They have the best lives.
What's your favorite food? What's your favorite food?
My favorite food. I really love peanut butter and banana smoothies. I know that's more of a drink, but I just really love that.
Your go-to. Who are your favorite people in crypto to follow on Twitter or on social media?
Funny you said that. I just spoke to Dan Jeffries this morning, and he is a very smart individual that people need to take notice of. He's like a science fiction writer. He also, you know, does amazing blogs on Medium. Second person is Kristen Lowe, and he is our head of design. He just has this incredible mind to be able to kind of bridge the gap between usability and technology. And, you know, it's like a pleasure to have him on the team. And then obviously my co-founder as well, George Harrop, he's a real, I think, a visionary. And he's got a point of view that I think it really kind of like questions society and stuff like that. So I think those would be my top three.
That's awesome. And if people want to contact you and learn more about BitSpark, how should they do that?
The best way to reach me is on Twitter. So I'm at Maxi Ryan. And then anything to do with, you know, what we do as a company, they should visit our website, which is www.bitspark.io. And they can access all our like Reddit channels, our Telegram channels, our Twitters, and all this type of stuff. So that would be the best way.
That's awesome. Well, Maxine, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been a real pleasure, and I wish you all the very best with BitSpark over the coming years.
I want to say a big thank you to Jess and Maxine for making it the wonderful, impactful show that it was. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. You know it makes sense. Hit us up on Twitter at @SVK_crypto. Hit us up on Telegram. That's where we're most active, SVK crowd. That's where you can find myself and the team. And feel free to email myself, cstory, C-S-T-O-R-R-Y, @svkcrypto.com. So with that in mind, that's a wrap. And I've got to bounce.